you're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas, and welcome inside another edition of Playing Through, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. I'm Bob Ballew.
Good morning. I am Carl Nicholson. Bob, always great to be with you.
I know it's... Good to see you, Carl. Hey, are you on the tee? Where are you right now? So I'm just standing here on the tee getting ready to get going. 23 degrees. It's perfect golf weather.
You know, for the stout-hearted, it could be. For two guys born in Texas and not really cold weather dudes per se, I think we're going to have to do a little virtual golf. You know, that reminds me, we never really talked about this. I'm not a video game guy, just the generation that I am. Yeah,
me neither.
I went to the arcade as a kid. I was an Atari guy. I wasn't even a Nintendo or Xbox guy either. But we have the Oculus Quest headset. And there is a golf game on there called Golf Plus. It started with a putting game, but they just added a fully rendered golf course. And now they're doing actual golf courses that really exist out in the world, like other video game platforms. Bob, it's the coolest thing. I mean, you can play a round of golf in about 20 minutes and it's completely immersive. I have never seen anything that really got me like this. You can go to the driving range. And this is a term as VR gets more into the mainstream of our lives and more people are using it. The haptics is a word you're going to hear a lot. That's the thing that makes your body movement and your perception of what's around you realistic. So yeah. For example, we'll go to the driving range on this. And basically there's a Topgolf, a fully rendered Topgolf that you can walk through. You can walk up, you can go up the stairs. You can be at any point. You can hang out at the bar, which, I mean, there's really no point to any of that. But you turn around and you've got this huge, beautifully lush driving range framed by mountains. And Bob, when you take a swing and you want to play a cut, if your hand position and your arms are doing what they're supposed to do and you're turning properly, it'll be a cut. If you smother hook it, it smother hooks. I mean, the rendering, real-time response in the ball trace is literally responsive to what your hands and body are doing. It's unbelievable. And to the point, now, obviously you're not hitting a ball, so you're essentially taking, 70, 80 practice swings to play around. Right. And as you get better, if you have it on set, start on the easy settings, you'll break par pretty quickly. I've made a couple of eagles just on those easy settings, learning the game. But what you'll find, even though you don't have the feel of impact, and you're not hitting the ground, you're not hitting the ball first, then the ground, and then following through, there's sound feedback. So when they know impact happens, you get that sound. You follow through, then you see the ball. So my first thing I was curious about before I play this, how dopey and unrealistic will this be? Well, it's not. Your brain really thinks you hit it because it made the sound of the ball being hit. You see where the ball is going. You're following like the flight of your real ball. And if you want to get distracted and look at the bird flying or the leaves drifting off the trees, that's all there. The lakes are there. The water has ripples. And it's only going to get better as they go, they say. Yeah, it's developed here in Austin by a brilliant guy who came onto the scene a couple of years ago with augmented reality. He had a green reading app that I thought was groundbreaking and innovative. And he's moved on to virtual reality and having huge success with this game. But I got as a dyed-in-the-wool, not video game guy, a guy that just can't afford 2-3 hours a night or more of distraction in that realm. And nothing against video games. I know it's a multi-billion-dollar industry and people are, making a lot of money. They're paying a lot of money just to watch people on YouTube play games. I'm not that guy. I love this. I freaking love this. And I'll just go have a range session with this thing on. Just to make sure that I'm clearing the hips. I really don't like seeing that ball drift out to the right.
Right.
Too much. I like the Charlie Woods butter cut that you saw at the PNC championship where it's just a little bit left of the target and drifts about, 5, 6, 8, 10 yards at the most. But you can actually do that. So to your point about cold weather, I know that's a long way around to being 23 degrees this morning. But that's the way I've sort of kept my swing in check. Now, will it translate? I know a lot of people want to roll their eyes and say, okay, you got a headset on, you're not swinging a club. But I'm performing the same sequence of motions. I'm getting feedback, and it feels pretty good. I mean, again, when this VR world, I think eventually they're going to have something that approximates a club or is a club. And if, for people that have the ability to do this in an environment where you can actually swing a club and not break something, I think this is going to explode. I mean, Ryan Engel, the CEO of the company that's doing this Golf Plus app, is already looking to league sponsorships. There's some exciting courses that we've talked about on this show a lot. That might be a part of this. There's some legendary venues. And some of the talk is that if you win your league or you win the national championship, you might want a trip to one of these iconic places in golf. I mean, so I think just from a cultural community standpoint, this is going to help grow the game of golf. It's going to get a lot of avid golfers excited about some aspirational stuff of, you know, what they can win and how they can grow their social circle within golf. So kind of weird, kind of on the geeky side of things, but I didn't think I could spend more than 5 minutes with it. It's something I do a couple times a week, and I really, really dig it.
Do you do it from home?
Oh yeah. You just put the headset on. Yeah. And you're there. And that's the other thing. If you had an Oculus set and you had this game, we could play together. I could see you or walk alongside mine. I would wait for you to hit your shot. It would be like we're playing around together. That's the other aspect of this, is because everybody's connected through Wi-Fi in these networks. You can play with your usual foursome. You can play with strangers. You can do it any form of social golf that you want.
That's pretty awesome. And I know that's where a lot of these, you know, we're kind of heading that way with a lot of things. And right. And like you said, you know, you can watch esports on TNT, and you know they're crowning people for millions of dollars, and that's become a huge market as well. So, I always laugh when I talk about video games, because I played Atari. I had a couple games on Atari, like Defender and Asteroids and Pitfall, and a couple of those games, and then kind of graduated to. You know, obviously I had to get some RBI baseball in, and once I got the Nintendo with Kung Fu and Mario Brothers and that, and then I just kind of stopped there. Like I never really got past, never into it. I loved being out playing stuff. I loved being out, you know, playing soccer, playing basketball, baseball, golf, tennis, like all those things when I was a kid. I've always joked, you know, I was my senior year of high school. I've always tried to explain to people how skinny I was. So I was 6'5". I was 6'5", 160 my senior year of high school.
Oh yeah.
And I kind of grew into that. So like if I turned sideways, you couldn't see me. Right. I could never really play football. I was never big into, I loved the game and I always wanted to play. It's one of the things I wish I had done, because I always wanted to play wide receiver and kicker. Those are the two things that I really felt like I could excel. But I never did. If I had gone over the middle and a linebacker would come across the middle or a safety, I would have broken every bone in my body. But I just couldn't put on weight. I ate 5 times a day. I had milkshakes and pizza and whatever. And then this is weird, Carl. I got to the University of Missouri when I went up there for school, and I found this thing, beer. And all of a sudden I started gaining weight. It was really weird how that worked. But here I am now. I'm 6'5". So I always kind of put it in perspective. I'm 6'5", 225 now. And, you know, I'm not like, if you look at me, you'd be like, yeah, I mean, you have a little bit of a gut. You could probably stand to work out a little bit more, like whatever. But you wouldn't be like, oh, you're fat or anything like that.
Not at all.
But to think that in high school, like my senior year of high school, I weighed 65 pounds less than I do right now. It's kind of mind boggling for me to think. So point being, I just never got into video games. I was always playing sports.
Right.
And to hear those kind of things, to me, it's now, listen, I can't watch a TV show right now. Like everybody talks about TV shows to get into. Like we've got so much going on with the two kids that I have no chance. I'm 4-year-old and a 17-month-old, but like at the same time, I always do think that would be pretty cool to be able to do something that would, you know, keep me in the game of golf. Because to be honest, Carl, you know, I've played in a couple scrambles, maybe two or three scrambles, but since September, since early September, I've played, I think, three rounds of golf. I just have not, I mean, with work and the kids and everything else, I just haven't had time to get out. And this is something we talk about on the show quite often, honestly, is, you know, when can you get out? How big a priority is it to you to get out? How big a effort do you have to make to make golf happen in your life? And for some people, it's a lot easier than others. Usually I have Fridays off and I can go play. That right. just hasn't been the case this fall. I've had a million different things I've had to do, whether it's, you know, going on the road with Texas to Dallas or Fort Worth for TCU or Oklahoma or stuff like that. Or, you know, just in general, a kid is sick or it's too cold or it's raining or like, it's just been a kind of been one thing after another. And so to get the opportunity to hopefully start playing again, you know, I've played once this month. It's just been brutal. So I'm kind of looking forward to maybe we can get these temperatures in a good state at 50, 55. I could maybe get some sun on a Friday and go play next week. We'll see what happens, but, yeah, it's been tough. And one of the things, you know, this is the time of year where I really start honing in on my game because I've got my big golf trip in April and I want to be, you know, playing pretty well going into it. And I just haven't even touched a club. So it kind of messes with your mind a little bit. And especially when you talk about your handicap, bro, I'm still a 5'5". How right. am I a 5'5" if I played three rounds in 5 months? Like, it's just, there's just a lot that goes into it. So, it, you know, again, golf is a luxury. Golf is one of those things that we all hope we can do and we can figure out a way to get it done. But for now, for me, it's just kind of a constant of, I can't do it right now. And that's okay.
No, it's totally okay. I mean, there's things in life, you know, it's hard for us to say this. It almost sounds sacrilegious, but there are more important things in life than golf. I mean, it seemed that way a lot of time. I've only ever worked in golf, and every paycheck I think I've ever had since I was probably 20 is been related to golf. So I should not speak ill of golf by any means, but you know, like you said, I mean, I remember that phase you're in with your kids. I mean, so there's movies that were made from like 2008 to 2015, 2016 that are just brand new to my wife and I, because we were not in the realm of having any time to ourselves. So I totally get that. So there's some blank points in history where we know nothing of pop culture or maybe even the world around us because our kids were just at that age where they required so much of our attention and time. And yeah, it just seems like we've had enough sunny days. I know we're having a little cold stretch here. It seems like there was enough going on where the weather was conducive, but just work's getting in the way. I've got some great opportunities with my day job. We're having to put some proposals together for some great companies. So I'm just being kept off the golf course. Friday, we had plans to play a little over a week ago and got met. Actually, no, it was this past Monday. I apologize. Frost delay. Well, yeah, it would have been perfect for me to keep that 7:27 tee time, be done way before 11, still have a full hard day of work. Kids were off. So we pushed it. Okay, I probably can't do that, but I can play 9. Well, I opened my email and playing 9 completely disappeared. Okay, I'm like, okay, I think between 1 and 2, we can probably go hit balls. What do you think of that? And my buddy's like, I got to Zoom later, but let's try.
Yeah.
Long story short, we did not do anything but get dressed for golf this morning, get told there was a frost delay, and not play. So
I think that's like, we deal with that at Twin Creeks all the time because we have frost delays almost every morning from now through, you know, March or April. And
right.
And so you can't tee off until 10. And for a lot of people, that just, you just can't do it. And so it makes it tougher. But yeah, like I said, it's a luxury to get to play at all. And
that's true.
And the, you know, we talk so much about how can you work on your game? How can you make it better? What can you do? Putting and chipping is number one on the list for me. I would think for most people, that's how you're going to make your game better. Because as I've always said, you can hit it anywhere off the tee. You can punch out anywhere from there, but can you get it up and down? That's the next question. So, those are that's the biggest thing. And, we'll see if we get there, Carl. I'm not sure how it's going to work, but my hope is at some point this year, I can kind of start playing a little bit more and we'll see what happens.
Your intentions are there. That's a good start.
That's what matters. Hey, it's a big week for you. The PGA show is in 4 days in Orlando. Are you heading down to Orlando or over?
I'm heading east tomorrow evening. We're going to host an outing for our friends at Omni at Champions Gate. We've got a small media reception. We're going to update the folks there on what's going to be happening with Omni La Costa, maybe a little bit of a sneak preview of some things going on with PGA Frisco. Kick the week off with that. Get some guys down there because a lot of people are pulling out of this PGA show. I think it's made the rounds and the news that TaylorMade, Titleist, Callaway, a number of the top OEMs are not going to be there. And that's what you go to the PGA show for, to see the big unveilings. I mean, those are the headline grabbers. So the headline grabbers are not going to be at this PGA show. This is a chance for the little guys, the entrepreneurs, and we just spent some time talking about Ryan Ingles' Golf Plus app. It's the guys with those groundbreaking concepts that I think have a chance to sort of define this year's PGA merchandise show, because a lot of the major equipment companies are releasing things off script. You already saw the TaylorMade Stealth line come out, almost a month prior to the PGA show. They leaked it on tour. Now it's on everybody's social media feed. And I think what you're seeing is the major manufacturers, these OEMs, sort of just take ownership and bring the media and bring their buyers out to Carlsbad or out to their, in Ping's case and some other companies' case out to Arizona, and sort of do it on their own schedule. So this is going to be a really huge prove it year for the PGA merchandise show. I mean, kudos to, Reed Exhibitions and the PGA of America for digging in their heels and doing it. I mean, because as we always say, this is a great old home week for a lot of PGA pros, a lot of guys that want to get out of the cold, go to Florida, play some golf, see some old friends. It's the ultimate networking week for the golf industry. But is this going to be, are we going to see a tipping point in terms of, will the larger companies continue to put all that money into what it costs to exhibit? And then, Titleist case, get everybody matching white blazers and walk the aisles and, have that dominant booth space that you see as soon as you walk in the very front of the convention center. How much is that's going to change, and how much of these little guys are going to take advantage of it and really kind of help redefine and take into the next generation what the show is going to be? Because for so long, it was top heavy. It was all these major names, your Callaways, your Titleist, your TaylorMade, your Cobras, et cetera, launching new stuff and really sort of being the carnival barkers of this show. The show's going to need to redefine itself in terms of innovation. Who are the next, who's the second tier behind those names we just mentioned, and really what defines this show? I mean, for a lot of the PGA pros, there's teaching seminars, there's business networking opportunities, there's business coaching sessions that they go to. So certainly for the core of the event, what it started as, the pros gathering, the pros setting the tone for the year, that's great. It's going to be really interesting to see a smaller show. Like I said, and with Omicron, we're doing the Omni outing. We're doing a media reception that's essentially outdoors on a patio. There's people within our organization that have talked about not even stepping foot on the show floor because of COVID concerns. And all those things are valid. All those things are understandable. So great, bold move to hold a convention in this phase of what we hope is the reclining, fading phase of the pandemic. But it's going to be very interesting. It's going to look a lot different than every other PG show I've been to, and I think I've been to 24.
Well, I know you, it's pretty cool you get the opportunity to do that. That's something that I think a lot of people who are really into the game of golf would absolutely love to do. And I think
I love seeing the first timers experience it.
Yeah. And I know it's pared down. I know it's not what it was just because of the pandemic, but that's a pretty special deal to get to head out there. So I hope that what you do when you get out there is just an absolute blast. And when you come back next week, you've got some good stories to tell. Some of the people you ran into and some of the new equipment, some of the things that you're going to get to see while you're out there. That's going to be pretty special. All right, listen, We've got a bunch to get to. We're going to take a break here, but feasibly one of the greatest shots we've ever seen from last week's PGA Tour event. We want to get a little bit into Hideki Matsuyama. And Carl, I have one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. And we'll tell that one in the final segment. It is
love it.
Truly unbelievable what happened to one of my best friends this week. So I'll get into that as well. We'll talk a little Texas golf too. That's coming up. This is a really fun Saturday morning for Carl and me as we get to do this show with you guys and talk golf with you guys. And while we've got you, we want you to head over to PGA Tour Superstore over at the Arbor Walk. It's right there. I never really know. I know it's at Mopac and Breaker, and that's the easiest way to describe it. It's right by the Domain. It's at Mopac and 360. You can go a lot of different ways by saying where it is, but it's right there. Right there by Q2 Stadium. You can get into all those things. But it's right there in North Austin, and our guys just do a phenomenal job of getting you fitted for clubs, of getting your gear, of getting your new look, getting you a new putter, whatever you need. They're there for you. Mention Carl and me, and then they'll hook you up. We're excited to be partnering with them again this year on a bunch of things that are going to be going on across the horn. And we're really, really happy they're back on board, and Carl and I are excited about that. So head on over to PGA Tour Superstore and get everything that you need. They are always there to hook you up. All right, more to come. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. We're back after this. Another good Saturday morning to you, Austin, Texas. Welcome back inside Playing Through, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore right here on the Horn. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Ballew. Good first segment. Good stuff. Just talking cold weather, golf, why we can't play, why it's hard to play, which is not something we usually talk about on the show. Usually you and I are like, yeah, I got out this week, got to do this, got to do that. But that's just not the reality of the world sometimes, and that's okay.
It's totally okay. Yeah, I mean, it is what's in front of us. And, you know, we there won't be long. They've compressed the daylight savings days. We're really just a few weeks. I mean, we've got to dig in and make it through February, which doesn't sound that hard. It's going to be a busy February, maybe a little travel mixed in, and we'll be back on the course by March. And things will get to normal. Our kids are still have needs. We'll still have things to do at home, but I think the days are only getting longer right now. I'm optimistic we can find some time. And I think keep digging in, keep trying to get to the range at lunch, do whatever it takes. Like you said, so you're committed to your Bandon trip in April, it sounds like, right? That's happening again. That's great. Very cool.
Very excited about that. That'll be a lot of fun as always. And just trying to get prepared for that, get dialed in for that, and we'll see how it goes. You never know. It's always tough to get your game in the right shape and then actually go pull it off when you get there, but we'll see if we can do it. Carl, the American Express Championship going on. No cut until after today, which is great. This is one of the tournaments I like, just in the sense that you know the guys are going to get three rounds. You can kind of make a move at some different – like some guys on day one, we saw like Lee Hodges at 10-under. Patrick Cantlay was 10-under through 13, which is just – I mean, some of the numbers they put up are insane. But you get to play, you know, PGA Stadium West, PGA, the Nicklaus course, and then La Quinta. And you get to play all three, and then there's a cut Saturday night after the three rounds, and then we crown a champion. I was going back to the champions list at this event. It is so interesting to see some of the names that, you know, early on this tournament was, I mean, it was Arnold Palmer won it five times. Jack Nicklaus won it. Doug Sanders, Johnny Miller, like guys that you kind of knew. If you look at the last 10 years of this event, you get a John Rahm and a Patrick Reed. And then beyond that, you get guys that just don't win on tour consistently, that aren't in the top 15 in the world, that aren't all that kind of stuff. So it's always, you just never know who you're going to get. Andrew Landry, the Austin resident, won this in 2020. So you get a lot of names that are, they become a little bit more household, I guess, because they win a tournament. But they aren't guys that you constantly see at the top of leaderboards. And I think that's what makes this tournament so interesting. And it gives some guys that are maybe we haven't heard of, or maybe we don't know their story, a chance to kind of hop up to the top of the leaderboard?
I think it's the nature, obviously, of the courses they play. You know, that could be a brutal golf course, but for these guys that hit it so far and so straight, it tends to be kind of a shootout. So it tends to be, open up the field to a lot more guys where they're able to fire at pins and do some really aggressive stuff and take advantage of their length on so many of these holes. Even on a course where you and I would be very unsteady, our knees would knock a bit. We'd lose more than a ball probably playing the Pete Dye Stadium course. But so I think when they used to spread it around on multiple courses, you would definitely, you know, when they'd go play the Citrus or the Palmer, I think for a while the Greg Norman course at PGA West was in rotation. It's moving just to the Dye. I think you've seen the scores compressed, but still these guys go for it and really go low. So I you know, and I don't mind an event like that. I think the Las Vegas event has been that way in years back in the day when Disney used to hold the late season event in October. That would happen a lot. You're seeing more and more a variety on the tournament. You know, this might fall under the category of the kind of PGA Tour setup that Bob Ballew hates, because you might see a winner in the 20s under par, but I think it's good. Like you say, it shows some variety. It shows you who's hot early. And as we tiptoe into that West Coast swing, I think it's very interesting to see the players that equip themselves and prepared off season. One of the things I keep seeing on leaderboards is the face and name of John Rahm. Yeah. I mean, so I think we're still very much in the, even though Colin Morikawa has a chance to catch him as number one in the world, I still feel like that we're in this John Rahm era until the horse knocks him off, you know?
I think that's fair. I think it's a very legitimate thing. I'm wondering if we'll get to 30 under. You're thinking we maybe at the 20s. I'm wondering if we're going to get to 30. That's always my question to this.
Well, you're going to see it more and more. I mean, and that's the thing, what we were talking about off air a little bit, that, you know, you point to the amazing shot that Hideki Matsuyama hit to win the Sony in Hawaii. And there's so much freaking good ball striking on the PGA Tour right now. I mean, if you looked at strokes gained approach right now, it's like, well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The Colin Morikawa is number one. Justin Thomas is right up there. Hideki's never far. Hideki just kind of plays possum a bit and then reminds us that he's one of the elite ball strikers in this generation, not just right now, not just in this tour season or the last, just really from the time he's come on tour. And a lot of people point to his putting woes in the past and everything he's done to try to improve his putting game. But he hit one of the iconic, you know, walk-off shot, if you will, kind of shots that he didn't even see. As you know, he looked up into the sun and had to look away. He didn't even get to see the path of the ball land near, even if you can from, I don't know if you even can from 280, you know, right. You really get a sense of how close it was and what a phenomenally good and tight shot that it was. But it feels like we're reminded more and more and more what an incredibly good era for ball striking is. Now, you might talk to somebody in their 60s and 70s and says, well, it's not a good era for shot shaping. It's not a good era for creativity and guys that can play at high, low, medium, around trees, over bunkers. So many of these guys are so good tee to green. I mean, I think of a guy like Cameron Champ or, you know, some of these names we mentioned that are consistently, you know, tee to green guys, even a young guy like Will Zalatoris that just comes out on the tour and he doesn't have to shape shots. he's gaining strokes off the tee and to the green. He's hardly missing fairways or greens. So, I mean, that's a great feeling in theory, but for most of us, it falls apart, right? Back when I was at Pels, they used to argue the strokes gain dynamic or working really hard on your short game because, Mark says, just look at this Mark Brody data. And all you have to do is hit about 13 or 14 greens around and short game becomes irrelevant. I'm like, well, yeah, nobody can argue the science of what you just said, but go practice it. Go show me your testing. You know, let's see the experiment of you going from hitting 6 greens around on a good day to 13 or 14 and tell me how much you need to practice your short game. It's never going to connect. It's never going to fully come together unless you have all those things. And that's the other point on Hideki Matsuyama is he really has brought around his full game. He's a much better pitcher chipper. You can see his creativity growing when he does miss screens. And his putting, you know, we had the same bias with Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson missed a lot of short putts that mattered at really critical times when a lot of eyeballs and a lot of cameras were on him. But if you, you know, if you needed six, you needed somebody to make a 6-footer, you know, to save your life, and it broke 2 feet, I mean, Phil Mickelson wouldn't be the worst guy. I think you'd pick him over anybody at the club, probably, right? I mean,
yeah, I would think so. Yeah. And you know, just going back to what the Hideki shot, like, I heard somebody kind of put it in perspective as just go when you're walking a course next time or you're riding the cart, whatever you're doing, and you're 280 out, just stop and look at that pin and see how small it looks and think about how good you have to be to hit that shot. There was actually, I don't know if you knew this. So I did not know this. I didn't know this was a rule on the PGA Tour. So Russell Henley hits a shot in the bunker, hits it out, and then just airmails a wedge over the green. You know, Hideki's 2 feet. He's got to play his next shot. He's got to hold that out to make birdie. Hideki's got a 2-footer for eagle. Russell Henley could have conceded. And that was something I did not know was a you were allowed to do on the PGA Tour in a playoff. But I did find that out. So he could have just said, hey, we're done here.
I'm toast.
Let's pick up. So I didn't know he could do that, which was interesting. Russell Henley, I let me ask you a couple questions about Russell Henley. I want to see if you can get this. This is my Russell Henley quiz. I know this is what you've been waiting for all day. As someone pointed out to me, because I was tweeting about how good that Hideki shot was, and somebody said, oh, yeah, after winning the national title Monday night, Georgia found a way to choke again.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, wow. We're like, people are ruthless on the old Twitter.com. So I'm going to give you like a true false here. Russell Henley has a top 10 finish in a major.
Okay.
Is that true or false?
As a top 10 finish in a major. Wow. I mean, now granted, this is a guy that has won tens of millions of dollars on the PGA Tour, has played in tour championships, won on the PGA Tour. So the assumption is, yeah, he's definitely getting into majors. And there's been some good Russell Henley runs in the past decade. So logic says yes. So I'm going to say yes.
That is false. Russell Henley's best finishes in a major. This is kind of crazy. 20th at the Open, 13th at the U.S. Open, 12th at the PGA Championship, and 11th at the Masters. So he does not have a top 10 finish, but he's just on the outside looking in. All right, my other true false question for you. Russell Henley has made $20 million in career earnings.
Let me see. Let me think about his game. Got out there.
Yeah, so he is. He was born in 1989. So what does that make him? 31.
Got on tour.
So he's obviously been. Yeah, I mean, he's been playing for a while.
Say 10 to a dozen years on tour. I would say just under 20 mil.
19 million. Yeah, right. Good. Well done. Yeah, he's at 19 million, which is a and then again, this is where we go back to. Now, obviously, these guys they travel on their own. Nobody's paying for their travel expenses or their hotels or anything as they you know sludge through in the early stages of their golf game trying to make this stuff happen. Obviously, Russell Henley has done very well for himself. He has 3 PGA Tour wins. But even seeing kind of bringing this kind of the point of all this, you know, losing that playoff to Hideki, and people are, you know, you'd say like, well, he probably should have never been in that position in the first place. Right. Well, because he had a 5-shot lead going to the back nine. Okay. He didn't play his best on the back nine. I think he finished one over. He shot 65 for the day.
Right.
He got 29 on the front and then shot 65 for the day. This is not a case of a guy collapsing in my mind.
No.
This is a case of Hideki Matsuyama shot 63 to tie him to get to the playoff and then just hit one of the greatest shots we've seen in a long time. So, you know, I think if you're Russell Henley, you probably take some of that as much as you feel like, man, I had a 5-shot lead going to the back nine. I could probably coast from there. Obviously, in the tour now, you can't do that. But I think he probably looks at it and goes, man, Hideki just caught me, as opposed to I choked this thing away. And so I thought that was special. Carl, do you have a what is the most in your mind? What's one or two of the greatest shots you've ever seen on tour?
Greatest shots ever seen on tour. Well, it's that you have to elevate that and make it about the moment. So Colin Morikawa's 3-wood at the PGA Championship, I think, is one of the greatest shots in recent history. I mean, that I witnessed. I mean, you go way back in history and talk about all kinds of shots that we didn't see or we only read about or we saw clips of. But my goodness, I mean, so
I'm just wondering what pops into your head.
That pops into my head. I think. Some of the shots that Nicklaus hit on that closing stretch in the 86 Masters. I mean, I was trying not to go too far back. I mean, you look at Tiger's boomerang wedge from the back of 16 at Augusta in the 2005 Masters.
Certainly, you have to.
That was just electric. I mean, when that ball goes in,
how about his flop shot at the Memorial when that went in? How about his flop shot at, I mean, he had two of those that, he basically had to hit perfect, and he hit both of them. He duffs the one in the rough and then makes jacks like he's going to make five, at least five here, and then he makes it for four, and then he flops the one in that, would have rolled into the water off the green if he hits it a little harder or if it doesn't,
right.
He has some of those that are amazing. I mean, obviously, like Larry Mize at the Masters, to win the 87 Masters was pretty unbelievable. Tom Watson at the U.S. Open in 82 when he chips it in from the deep rough on 17.
Oh my gosh.
There are just so many like that you think of when they pop into your head. I mean, the Nicklaus putt in the 86 Masters is obviously another one that you think of. But you're right. To me, it's thinking more about like Morikawa's 3-wood and Hideki's 3-wood. Like, when have we seen shots like that from distance? It's very rare that we get something like that. I mean, and that's why I would include maybe even Larry Mize. That's a chip more than it is a long shot. But
right,
those two shots.
We talked about chips, hold putts, or time. Like in Tiger's case, he kind of just overcooked that shot on 16 and had to pull a great recovery shot. I mean, so that's what we tend to talk about. Either a bomb of a putt historically is what we've looked at. I mean, things like Constantino Rocca, scuffing it and then holing it from the Valley of Sin, to get into the playoff at the Open Championship in 95. Just crazy stuff like that. But you're right. It's almost never, somebody drives a green to a foot on a drivable par four to close something out, because there's not many tour or major championship venues that end like that or have those closing holes so late. It just doesn't happen to be that way,
right?
But there's, yeah,
some good ones.
So again, I mean, to sort of lean on our recency bias, you look at Colin Morikawa's shot at the PGA Championship, and then that shot by Hideki is being all time great, because those just aren't high percentage shots. I mean, those are,
right.
It's almost, the way we spent the better part of the last decade looking at the NBA and saying, okay, what used to be a great shot from 22 feet is now mind boggling from 30 feet. When you look at things like what guys like Steph Curry are doing, they're expanding our, so maybe the way that, it's happening across all sports, great ball striking's happening from, longer distances, and I think that could be an exciting thing. It's great to say that's great luck. A lot of things have to culminate for your ball to land very, very close to the hole from 280 yards or more, or even longer in Matsuyama's case. But, the fact of the matter is there is really, really good ball striking on the PGA Tour right now. It's coming through. So I think the likelihood, I mean, yes, a little bit of luck has to intervene, a little bit of circumstance, a little bit of intangible has to happen for, because certainly people have hit great 3-woods on that shot, and a great 3-wood might land a 5 feet or 10 or,
right.
Catch a swale and, be just as pure as the one Hideki hit, but rolled a 15 or 20 feet away.
Right.
Was it any poorer of a shot? Did it just not, you know, did it catch the right place right in front of the green with the right amount of softness at the right time with the right amount of sunlight? And then it stops by the hole and the green, just enough green growth because it was later in the day and it didn't roll 6 feet past, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just think there's so much good ball striking.
Yeah.
Right. I thought we talked about it. You know, the old guys are going to say, well, they don't recover as well, or they're not as imaginative and they don't create shots as well as the previous generations, but they freaking don't have to, you know?
Right. Agreed. I totally agree.
There's
just some unbelievable ones.
Yeah. If you're a pure route runner, you don't have to be very great at improvising. Right. I mean, you know, you need a little bit of that. I mean, it's just one of those things where, these guys are so good and they're able to dedicate themselves at a young age so completely to the game. And they've got such good biomechanics and technical and technological feedback right now to really advance their training and their physical ability from a fitness standpoint to repeat these things that they need to do. You know, I took a good hard look at Hideki's swing this week to try to figure out, and again, you know me well, you've seen how horrible my game is, but I'm by no means a swing expert by any means, but I wanted to know what the experts had to say about what was so consistency, because he has an unusual move. Everybody points to the pause at the top, and there's a great video you should check out. Maybe it was produced by Mark Immelman, I can't recall, but it was literally a time lapse from the same point of address of Tony Finau and Hideki Matsuyama, and literally, and we might have talked about this, Hideki's just getting to the top when Finau is already at impact and getting through the ball and getting into through. I mean, it's that difference. It's not just the 0.2 seconds of Hideki's pause. It's that he's very sure with his body motions. His upper body, his lower body looks very quiet on the takeaway.
Right.
But what you might know that his lead knee is sort of flexed and helping him turn, and actually kind of accelerating that turn back a little bit. The pause at the top is nice. And we all think about, like, okay, we've got the wrist cocked, so we're just going to lead with the wrist down. I mean, I don't know if everybody thinks that way, but a lot of people point to the wrists on the transition. Hideki's really good about keeping the arms together. And they pointed that his sternum is always the same distance from the golf ball through that transition and through the ball dip. Even though his hands are high, he's able to kind of keep that space between him and the ball and catch it almost all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. His swing is, it's so smooth and it's so much fun. I love watching guys swings and just taking a little piece here and there from those. All right. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up the show and wrap up everything we've kind of gotten into today. It's been a good one. We'll talk about it all. That's coming up. This is PGA. What is this? What do we call this?
We're playing through on the horn.
I keep saying PGA today. I don't know why. It's early, Carl. It's early.
There's a lot of news. The PGA show, the PGA Tour is in full swing.
Playing through brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore, and this is the horn. All right, final segment of Playing Through on the Horn. He is Carl Nicholson. I'm Rob Ballou. We're happy the PGA Tour Superstore is bringing you the show this morning, and Carl, I promised a great story. It's time for me to deliver. I hope you find the story as amazing as I did. On one of my best friends, Tony Brody, talk about him a lot on the show. We played member guests together at each other's club, and just a really good friend of mine. Tony's out in Hawaii for doing some work and doing the Champions Tour Pro-Am. He gets a chance to go out there and do that every year. And
fantastic.
So he's playing this week. He got to play with Darren Clark and Vijay Singh on Tuesday and Wednesday, but he had a little bit of a special round on Monday. His dad is buddies with Lanny Watkins, and Lanny hooked him up, and he got to play around with Ben Crenshaw.
Oh, sweet.
So he's texting me this, and he's, you know, sent me a picture, and I'm out here, you know, whatever. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. I mean, seriously, like you get to play around with Ben Crenshaw is, and we all know him. He's an Austin legend. But the idea of getting to play an actual round with him is pretty incredible. So, yeah, he's texting me like, I get to play with Ben Crenshaw. I'm like, this is the coolest story ever. Like, he's gotten to go out there for 4 or 5 years now and play with some different guys. And I got to meet Joe Durant because of it, and we went to dinner one night. Just he's met a lot of really good guys.
Right.
Kind of going through the day, and I'm not really thinking about it. And he's, you know, it's obviously he's way, you know, time difference is way different. So I get a text at whatever time it was Monday night. I just made my first career hole in one.
Are you kidding? After all the other things he did?
I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. He's like, no. So he sent me a video of him walking up and seeing that it went in. I don't think he knew it. He thought it did, but he didn't know. You go up and see it. He has Ben signed the ball. His first round out there playing with Ben Crenshaw, he makes his first career hole in one.
That's
and I was just like, you got to be kidding me.
That is the best of the best. I mean, Tony Brody could quit golf right then and there. That could be his
honestly. I would never. Would you ever play again? I mean, obviously you would, but like, it's unbelievable.
There's some extraordinary experiences in golf. But again, you have to let the words roll off your tongue and say that would be extremely hard to top. I mean, we're both very fortunate to get to do some really cool things in the game. Spending the day with Ben Crenshaw and hitting a hole in one. That's right at the pinnacle, right?
It'd be number one if I had to guess. I don't know that will ever be top. Playing with your dad, playing with Ben Crenshaw, and making a hole in one for your first.
That's a fantastic story. It makes me not regret giving my annual story of since the PGA Tour is at the stadium course at PGA West. This is usually about the time of year that I tell somebody the Hollywood Henderson story. That's this apocryphal story that's come down from my buddy that I'm sure I've told it on this show of. Two members betting each other $10,000 whether Hollywood could break 200 from the championship tees on the stadium course. It's just a phenomenal story how it ends. But
we'll tell that one next week. We're gonna have to. That sounds like an amazing. That's a good tease for next week's show.
It's perfect, and it's and I thought it was apocryphal. I thought it could be embellished, and then we ran into Hollywood, and it turned out to be all true.
Even better. I love it. Great golf stories are the best part of this show. And I'm glad I got to tell one, and I can't wait to hear Carl's next week. All right, Carl, always enjoy this big, ugly tailgate. Coming up next with Johnny Rogers, Jason Sutter, Nashi Kamrath. I'm sure they'll have a little bit of Texas football to talk about with Gary Patterson donning the burnt orange and getting this whole class of probably 36 new scholarship players, which is 42% of the roster. So I'm sure those guys will get into that this morning. I'm interested to hear how Johnny responds to TCU great Gary Patterson wearing burnt orange. I think that'll be pretty funny too. But that's coming up next. Carl, look forward to doing this next week.
It's going to be a blast. Can't wait.
All right, he is Carl Nicholson. I'm Bob Belew. This is Playing Through on the Horn, brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.